Thanks everybody for joining us today for a client presentation call on OASIS led by Mary Kronk. So Mary, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tracy. Thanks for joining in, everybody. I think you'll probably see some differences maybe in the way that I do presentations to the way Mike does it. Mike is a star and very thorough and very detailed. You'll find today that I usually present right to the model and I leave all the heavy lifting to the franchisor. Earlier, when people had joined the call just a few minutes ago, I started to ask what would make this call most valuable for you, and the feedback I got was really that it would be helpful to hear positioning for different buyer motives. So I will definitely address that. Before I get started, is there anything else that would be helpful to you to know before our time is done? All right. Well, we'll leave it for questions later for sure. So, you know, first and foremost, I want to let y'all know, you know, OASIS is brand new. They came to the Franet meeting back in March, I guess it was, and of course they have wonderful systems and wonderful staff as they all come from the cleaning authority, so that gives me great comfort in presenting it. That said, I presented it once and closed one deal, so I'm one for one with it, so it is still a bit new to me too as I dive into it. As you all can probably see, I sent over the PFA for John, who was my client who actually made this investment, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about him so you all can kind of understand how I positioned it in our meeting. So John had worked in educational publishing. He had been with Pearson. The things that he really loved doing was really working with the teachers and teaching and mentoring. He enjoyed trade shows and consumer shows as a part of that, and he enjoyed working the crowd. He's a people person. He does profile. If you look back, he is a belonger, societal. By the way, John is located in the Midwest, and I can tell you that when I had more Midwest clients back when I was in Indianapolis, we saw lots of belonger societals up there that had great business acumen. If you look at his values and motives in the PFA, you'll notice that achiever and societal were pretty close there. Belonger was kind of his primary. If you look at the OASIS two-minute drill, you'll see the buyer motives that they're looking for are achiever, societal, belonger. So we kind of had those three things, not necessarily in that order. The other thing I'll tell you about John, if you look at his kind of his meta programs and strategies, his task attitude was procedural. So anyway, that's the way I kind of attacked it from the presentation perspective. But he was somebody who really loved interaction with the customer. He must have told me that a million times. And as you can imagine, we spent a lot of time doing bonding and rapport up front, as you would do with belongers. So I really got to know him personally. He had actually taken a step out of the corporate world and into owning his own business. And he did what a lot of people do. He jumped into something that he thought he really had passion for. In his case, it was the Bloody Mary mix business, which I have passion for that too, but what he found was it was something that was going to take him a really long time to ramp up. It took him a long time to get into the distributors. So really important in his new business experience, he wanted something that he could really ramp quickly. And again, just reminding you, he really loved that interaction with clients. That was a really important thing to him. His passions were things like sports and good health. He really wanted a business that would help other people, and he brought right out that he had interest in helping the elderly or working with children. And I think a lot of that went back to his experience in educational publishing. When we looked at growth strategy for him, he really couldn't see past having more than one territory or one unit. That's pretty common for somebody who may profile belonger societal. They're always thinking about the first one first, if that makes sense. You know, for him personally, he had lost a lot of nights and weekends to this Bloody Mary mix business, and he really wanted to have more flexibility, more time at home, more normal routines as a part of that as well. As far as financial goals for the business, he was pretty realistic about that. He was looking at first-year earnings, $50,000 or so, being able to grow the business to about $200,000 in owner benefit, pretty well in line with what he was doing when he was at the publishing company there. As far as retirement went, you know, he was really focused on having more flexibility in retirement, having free time, but still wanted to have something that he would be involved in. Exit strategy, he just wanted something that he could have still providing income to him and maintain relationships. Again, he was very, very much a people person. Very comfortable with doing selling. He didn't want to do a whole lot of direct cold calling, but he knew that if he built the right relationships that he would be in good shape with that type of sales. He really favored more business customers, but he didn't want to rule out general public customers. What was really important to him as a function of what the business was is that it brought value to other people's lives. He wanted to have a business where he was doing it for the good of the people, and it was rewarding for them and rewarding for him. As far as employees went, he said he didn't have a whole lot of management experience, and he said that the idea of working on his own in the business was something that was pretty attractive to him, something that was actually home-based. As far as maturity and structure go, he was really leaning toward the newer end of the spectrum of opportunity out there. He said he'd like to have a franchisor with great established systems, but something that he felt like he'd be able to build with the franchise. He said he felt like that would really draw on his challenge, his interest in having challenge. His budget for the business was around $160,000 or less, and he had $120,000 in a line of credit already. So he didn't really have to worry a whole lot about putting together any type of funding, if you will. So as you all can maybe hear, for me, sometimes when I'm presenting businesses, something really starts screaming at me, this is it, this is it, this is it. And I led with Oasis for that very reason, because it fits so many of the things that he really wanted. When I work with my clients as a part of building the business model, I also, you know, give that model back to them, kind of a windmill through it, I think is what you hear in training, and then talk through the due diligence process and what that's going to be and make sure that I understand what's going to be important to them as a part of that process. And then I talk to them about putting together a strategy for benchmarking different businesses together in the research process. In his case, we were looking at something that was both B2B, B2C, home-based, no employees, which was kind of our Oasis piece. We also looked at something that was strictly B2B with an office, white-collar employees. In this case, I presented Office Evolution. Again, great flexibility with that business. We also looked at semi-absentee retail, low numbers of employees, passion for fitness, few hourly employees to that, so I presented 9 round. And then finally, we looked at something more related to education where he could manage 2 managers, a part of the business, one from the beginning, and I presented college nanny and tutors. So kind of fed to his interest in understanding the elderly, working with the elderly, also working with other businesses, something that appealed to one of his passions, the fitness piece, and then also something that was educational. But all 4 of those franchises really fitting into the majority of his goals, his values, his criteria, and his budgets for the business. So when I put together the strategy, I don't tell him what the businesses are. I tend to just say, you know, here's what the strategy is. Does that sound okay? Typically, I get a yes answer, and then I dive into those presentations. So as I mentioned to you before, I led with Oasis, and I went straight back to his business model, and I said, you know, when you told me that you really loved interaction with customers, you had a passion for working with the elderly, you really wanted to enjoy flexibility as a part of the business and be able to build long-term relationships as a part of having the business, it immediately brought this business to mind. Also, you told me you wanted something that was quick to ramp. So it got me thinking about a business called Oasis Senior Advisors. What's interesting about Oasis is all of the systems that were put together for Oasis came from another very successful franchise called the Cleaning Authority, as did many of its executives coming into that business. So I think it gives you that opportunity to get into a newer franchise, ground floor opportunity, where you can grow with the franchisor. And really your function in the business is to build an inventory of communities for seniors that would allow you to help them place seniors in those communities, really help people find the right fit. You know, frankly, it's not too different from the Frannet business. You'd be working with your client to understand what it is that they really need in the place that they are going to live, and then help to identify those opportunities and then help those communities actually bring those people in. You know, with all of the systems behind it, with all the marketing behind it, I really think it's something that you should take a look at. And with that, I will introduce you to Tim Ivankovich. He happens to be the president of Oasis. So there's my presentation. So not huge, not tons of details to that, but presented exactly to the model that he had. Generally at the end of the presentations, I try to present different things, different investment levels. At the end of the presentations, I don't ask people what they think of them. I just simply ask, does it sound like we're off to a good start? Because I already got their buy-in that they were going to do the research when we talked about the due diligence process. And I tell them exactly who's going to be calling them. I tell them, you know, when I'm explaining the due diligence process, they're going to get all the details from the franchisor. So, like I said, not a lot to it, but that's kind of how I dive into it, and then leave it to the franchisor to do the heavy lifting. You know, as far as presenting to different styles, you know, with John, again, he's a belonger, so really had to highlight the relationships, the community aspects of Oasis. If John were more of an achiever, I probably would have talked about more of the high-level goals and the ability to build an empire with it. With it being societal, you know, I guess I probably would have led with, this is all about helping the elderly. This is about helping families. By the way, the presentation for College Nanny and Tutor isn't too far off of that. It's all about building stronger families. So again, you're leading with appealing to maybe what the primary buyer motive is. The other thing I do with more of my belonger candidates is I might tell them something personal about the person that they're going to be talking to at the franchise or corporate headquarters. So in this case, at this time, Eric Wexler was actually still with Oasis. So I got to tell him about my experience with Eric and how much he would appreciate the relationship with him. You know, he's a baseball fan, which John was as well. He really enjoys sports. He's really astute businessman, just like John. And so I thought they would really have good conversations as they got to know each other. And because John's a belonger, you know, that tends to give our belonger candidates a lot of comfort in making that connection. And then, of course, I tell him, you know, Eric's going to be reaching out to you later today or early tomorrow to set up that first call. And then in our first call, we're going to talk about your first impressions. You can tell me what you think about these things after you've heard more about it. Does that sound okay to you? Generally, people come back and say, yeah, that sounds great. And then we get started in the process. So any questions?
Well, that was great.
Oh. Hi, Mary. Have you presented this to anyone that's pushed back? And what are the objections that you're getting, if that's so?
You know, I haven't presented this to anyone else. I mentioned early on the call, I'm one for one. I made one presentation, closed one deal. So I still need practice at that. But I will tell you that when I present something that's brand new, I always lead with the experience of the franchisor. I let him know it's ground floor. And through the process, through the follow-up process with John, you know, John was franchisee number one, by the way, for Oasis. So there really wasn't anybody to validate with. And Eric got a little creative on how that was going, and he actually connected John to other prospective franchisees. They were able to kind of share some information, and he ended up going to training with some of them as well. So, but I told him many times, this is way more entrepreneurial. You know, you've got all of this good experience, but that's what it is. It's experience relative to another brand, so it's entrepreneurial, and, you know, you have to feel good about moving the ball forward. One of the things about Oasis is they have a franchisee, and forgive me, the person somewhere in the Midwest, I think it's in Michigan the franchisee is, or the creator, I should say, is in Michigan. So all of the basis of Oasis is based on that experience combined with all of the marketing and back-end business capabilities that the cleaning authority had. So we talked about that quite a bit, too, when he was going through the process.
Mary, this is Charlie. So a question about your process. How much, when you're sitting down with this guy and you've got the CFA, and can you talk about just your process in terms of information or tools, what you do to gather information about the client beyond the PFA prior to the client meeting? There's more questions, obviously, that take place in conversation in the client meeting. And then, you know, you've got, I'm sure, a list of possible concepts that you're going to show. So when you make the decision to say, okay, now, like, click, I've got it, I know the four or three that I'm going to show, and then you explain your strategy, I'm going to show you one that's like this, I'm going to show you one that's like that. Are you doing that on the spot, or just can you talk through your process a little bit of how it works?
Sure. So, you know, I may be a bit old school here, so forgive me. It may be different than what's currently being taught, but, you know, I still, when I meet somebody or a lead is created, if you will, I email and call that person to schedule a time to talk to them for a 10 to 15 minute call. And for my achievers and emulators, it truly is a 10 to 15 minute call. I say 10 to 15 minute call to a belonger, and I book 30 minutes. Because in that first call, we're going to talk in detail about what led them to look at franchising. We're going to talk about maybe their experience in the corporate world because they want to share those things. And belongers like John, I mean, they want to know something about you too. Your achievers don't care as much. They just want to know that you can help them get to where they want to be, right? Very goal-oriented. Your emulators want to tell you all the great things that they've ever done in their lives, which is cool. And, you know, sometimes they want to hear some of those great things from you to validate that you're worthy enough to be working with them. And your societals generally, you know, they give you a little bit of information, but, you know, again, it's kind of focused on a greater good. So they may be telling you about their backgrounds with their churches or their experience with what they've done in the community. But, you know, I was just pulling up my first call here with John. You know, again, it was about a 30-minute call. He, you know, he was somebody who, you know, wanted me to get to know him. He was a referral, obviously, so we wanted to talk about that referral, how we knew that person. So we talked about that, talked about his corporate background. I asked him about his timing in terms of when he wanted to get into business. We talked about his budget for it, what was kind of comfortable, what he was thinking there. I explained the process in detail because he's a procedural about here's what we're going to do, and here's how we're going to do it. Here's first I'm going to send you the assessment, then we're going to set a time to talk in detail for about 2 hours. We may not need that much time, but at least we'll have it if we do. And here's what we're going to go through in building the business model, identifying the options, and starting the research process. And then I took it a step further and tell him about the research process itself. And every step of the way I'm getting buy-in. Does that sound okay to you? Does that make sense to you? And, you know, generally people who are following along, they're saying, yes, 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 that makes sense to me. Great. So we're all on the same path. So when I get the assessment, you know, after that, I've already got somewhat of an idea of what this person is and what they're looking for, and I can really see that reflected in the assessment. If not, I can really see where the holes are, the disconnects are, so I can get ready to address those things in the meeting. And then, you know, as far as meeting process goes, it's, you know, classic Sandler. You know, it's bonding and rapport, upfront contract. Then we're actually building the business model, working through the budget, and then the fulfillment piece comes in my presentation. Actually, you know, may do a little bit of explaining how the decision's going to get made, but then get into the presentations. And then I end every meeting with setting up for that first call, right? Because, I think, like, probably Ted Fireman and Jim Rhodes, they're both on the phone. They've heard me say this before. Usually when people take a jump off the cliff or off the bridge, it's after the first call. So you have to be careful not to hold their hand and jump with them, because that's when they've come to these wild conclusions that the business isn't going to work because there's too many of them in their neighborhood, or they're never going to clean toilets, or whatever the issue is. So you're kind of setting up for first impressions, right? That's what's coming. And then you're listening for what those concerns are, so you can turn around and feed that back to the franchisor and say, hey, you know, classic, here's what they're worried about. You know, some of those things you kind of learn over time how to work through. But, you know, every call that we're going through in the process itself, you know, we're talking about the business model. We're looking at what changes. Frankly, when I build the business model, I set the expectation that if we have open criteria, we're going to measure it by looking at these different businesses, by putting together the strategy for looking at different businesses. So at John, as an example, you know, not sure he wanted to have physical location, yet I had given him a few businesses where he was going to have that. So that kind of helped him learn about real estate, whether or not he could find a comfort level with that, you know, to be able to rule those things in or out. He really loved College Nanny and Tutor. He thought it was a great business, but he was really concerned about his management skill. And as he got into validation, he realized it was going to be more for him than maybe he was going to be comfortable with. And so he really went back to that idea that, boy, if I just do this myself, this could be a great thing for me. So anyway, that's what we work to in all of those follow-up calls and feeding all of that back to the franchisor to get them all the way to the end. Is that helpful? Is that what you were asking?
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions?
I got another follow-up, Mary. Do you take a break in the middle of your two-hour meeting, or is it a continuous process where you're, based on any new information that's come up from the conversation, you're adding or subtracting, kind of winnowing down your list of maybe possible 10 down to the 3 or 4 that you're going to show?
You know, sometimes if I'm really head scratching, or if I'm really having trouble because we have limited inventory or something like that, yeah, I'll take a break and with purpose send everyone to the restroom or whatever it's going to be. You know, early on, I always suggest to people as they're getting used to handling the Franet process, you can really split this into two meetings. And there are some people in Franet, very established, who still split it into two meetings where they're building the business model in the first meeting. And then the second meeting, they're walking through the business model, talking through the due diligence process, and then making those presentations so they can go take a few days to think it over or to get help from their coach to make sure that they're presenting things that can really be a fit. You know, generally, I'm thinking through this, you know, back and forth while I'm talking to the person, thinking through what may work for that individual. But I always do start with a list, like you said, of 13 or 14 different businesses. It kind of depends on the person and what their capabilities and wants are as a part of having the business. Usually I can kind of establish in that upfront qualifying call if we're going to head down a path where the person's going to jump in with both feet and actually run the business from the beginning, or if we're going to be looking at things that are semi-absentee, or if we need to have some kind of mix of both. So that kind of helps me determine what the list is going to be. And then, yes, you know, I'm kind of thinking through what may work and what things need to be backburnered or things that absolutely won't work.
Thank you.
Sure.
Mary, this is Jim Rose. I got a quick question for you. When you build that list of, say, 13, 14 different possibilities, do you kind of let the client see you strike certain ones off the list, kind of make it, give them the understanding that you're really trying to fine-tune it toward them?
You know, if I was sitting face-to-face with somebody and they were a visual, that could be a really effective tactic. Yes, you could definitely do that. And, yes, I have done that. In this particular case, John's a kinesthetic. So, okay. You know, and we were on the phone, so it was more speaking to, not to sound cheesy, but it's more speaking to his understanding and his heart, because that's what he was all about, you know.
Okay.
If you had a visual in front of you, that would be a really effective tactic to help them understand. You could even have them come back and ask you why you let go of something, and, that could work pretty well. One thing I'll mention, had John been had he been more of an optional, and by the way, four choices for a belonger societal procedural's pretty much a lot. Right? And I warned John right up front, this is going to be like drinking from a fire hose, so, you know, are you okay with this? And I would ask him that because of that kinesthetic piece. But if John had been an optional, I probably would have gone through a strategy of five or six different businesses and had him tell me which couple of them rose to the top.
Okay.
And then got started there.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Well, Mary, this is Frank Dunn.
Hey, Frank.
How are you doing? Really quick question. I think this year might be a little bit different than last year or previous years because there seem to be many more job opportunities for some of the clients that we're dealing with. And, obviously some of the clients we're working with are still looking at jobs, which is a very familiar world to them, and it might be easier for them as creatures of comfort to go back to the world that they know and do things that they're most familiar with. And I don't want to ask this question because it's very fresh. I just had a meeting this morning where a client told me the options I came back with were really quite different than what she envisioned I was going to come back to her with, even though they hit her model. So I'm just kind of wondering how you handle that type of a situation.
Well, when I can see that train coming, I tell the story of the ugly dog. And again, a few of y'all have heard the story, so I apologize. But first and foremost, when I'm in my seminars and my webinars, I tell people, you know, what's part of what we get to do is have some fun with this. And the only thing that I ever ask of people is that they're committed to the research so we can, number one, actually learn something, and two, have some fun. Because I tell people flat out, I may come up with things you may think I'm crazy for coming up with. But sometimes it's a bit counterintuitive how these businesses actually work and operate. So if the lady had said that to me, that, wow, this is really different than I thought the way this was going to go, I probably would have pulled out the story of the ugly dog, and it goes this way. I had a gentleman in San Antonio a few years back. He'd been a director at Harlan Clark, which is a big check manufacturing company, paper manufacturing company. And he had run just this huge call center. He had all these hourly employees. He had managers in place. And when he first came to me, Frank, he told me that he thought he might want a dog walking franchise. And so, you can really see we're on totally different pages here. I mean, he was going to pay a franchise fee to walk people's dogs. So we had to talk through all of that, right? So when we finally get together, we build out his business model, and knowing his experience, what he was looking to get out of the business, I went through and I presented three businesses. The third business I presented was the cleaning authority. And he looked at me and he said, I can't believe you brought up that business. That thing is an ugly dog. I can't believe you'd even present it. And I said, you know, there's a lot of people out there in the business. You know, they have a few hundred franchisees. You know, I wonder what they know maybe that you don't. And I guess the question is, if it could really meet your goals and your criteria and what you're looking for, does it make sense to even have a look? And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, okay, I'll do it. And so guess what? 45 days later, he bought the ugly dog. He became a cleaning authority franchisee. So that's how I kind of combat that. And people get a laugh out of the ugly dog story. You know, but that's how I kind of combat that when people are coming at me and saying, well, that's not really what I expected. I already set up with them in the seminar webinar that I was going to come up with something they didn't expect. And I had already established what I was hoping to get out of this relationship we were forging together. And then kind of going back to that, you know, when that big ambush came up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So does that help you at all? You think you can use the ugly dog?
I will most certainly use that. Thank you. Very useful.
Good. Incidentally, the ugly dog guy, he wrote me a thank you note, and it said, thank you so much for showing me the ugly dog. And I told him that I was going to tell his story everywhere I went, and I would always save his thank you note. And we had a good laugh over that.
Mary, do you give the client any collaterals on the concepts that you show them, a flyer, any type of material, or do they walk out, you know, only with notes?
No, I mean, some of them take notes and some of them don't. I don't give them anything but the blueprint for success. And I tell them really specifically, again, these people are going to call you. And I tell them when I'm talking through, so let's say, John, as an example, I gave you all his business model. Let's say I windmilled that back to him, and then I'd ask him, does that make sense? Did I miss anything? Anything else you've been thinking of I didn't ask you about? And, you know, typically people add things in or they'll say no, whatever it is. And then I'll say, okay, well, let me tell you a little bit about how the research process is going to go. You know, as soon as we leave this meeting, I'm going to send this assessment and this resume to the franchisors that you're going to be talking to. They're going to do one of two things right away. They're either going to pick up the phone and call you to set a time for a lengthier call, or they're going to email you to set a time for a lengthy call. In that call, you can expect three different things to occur. You know, the first is going to be that they're going to tell you about how this business actually works and operates, because I'm going to tell you about this business in terms of really how it fits your model. Then from there, they're going to tell you what their due diligence process is for you, because a lot of them recognize you don't know what you don't know, and they're going to try to fill in as many of those blanks as they can to help you make your best decision and collect your facts. And then finally, it's the beginning of demystification for the two of you mutually, right? They're looking as hard at you as you're looking back at them to make sure that it's going to be a fit. You know, from there, they may have some of those steps for you in their due diligence process, but one of those is going to be they're going to disclose the franchise disclosure document. Inside, I'll tell them the same thing I'm telling them in my seminars, by the way, 23 different items regulated by the FTC. What most people want to know is how much money can I make? You know, in item 19, if they disclose anything about that, it will be there. Outside of that, they can't speak to it, but their franchisees can. So, you know, you'll have opportunity to speak to their franchisees, and you're really trying to get a cross-section of about five different types of people by talking to maybe 6 to 10 different franchisees. You want to talk to some that are new to the business to validate cost of entry and training. You want to talk to some that have been in the business for a while so you can validate earnings and start to put together your projections. You also want to understand how they feel about the support they're receiving and make sure that where they see the business headed and the industry headed is the same place that the franchisor is telling you that it's going. You also want to talk to some franchisees who are their top performers. If you can imagine, every one of these systems has the normal bell curve of activity. They have a top 20 to 25% of the franchisees that are setting the world on fire, a middle 50 to 55% that are the happy campers, and a bottom 20 to 25%. These are folks who have had the wheels fall off, or maybe they would not choose that business again. So you're really trying to sample some of those top performers to make sure you have the same success criteria and abilities they do, and maybe some of those bottom performers so you can understand where the wheels fall off and make sure you're not identifying with them. And then finally, if you can find someone that has a similar corporate background to yours, that can be really helpful as well. And once you're starting to get into those calls and getting a better picture of what this business is like, if you think that there's something there that may really be a fit for you, the franchisor may invite you and your wife to jump on a plane and visit them at the corporate headquarters. And they may call this Discovery Day or Meet the Team Day or Join the Team Day, but the purpose is the same, and that's to give you more information and allow you culturally to see if this is going to be a fit for you by meeting all the people who are going to train you and support you as a part of having that business. And assuming you found something that you think is going to work, you may choose to have a franchise attorney involved in reviewing your agreement and making sure you understand what it is that that you are agreeing to. And that's really how you're getting to your yes or no on these things. Does all of that make sense to you? So I'm getting them to buy into all of that right up front so I can lead into my presentation and, again, let the franchisors do the heavy lifting when they get in front of them. Does that help?
Yes.
Especially with procedurals, you have to be really, really succinct about those things because they love it. And they can see it, and it makes sense, and there's a plan. Anyone else have any questions? Tracy, you still there?
I'm still here. I was just waiting for someone to pop up with a question, but if not, thank you very much, Mary, for leading the call today and spending time with us, and we appreciate it.
Mary,
thank you,
Mary.
Thank you.
Fire, be as good as you are.
Well, if y'all have any questions or anything comes up, feel free to call me. Y'all take care. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Mary.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Tracy, have a great one.